Hello and welcome once again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast, sci-fi from a certain point of view. I am your host, The Monster. I am back once more to give you not so much sci-fi news for this week, but I'm going to do two movie reviews. One on Jurassic World, and Ant-Man. Now, normally, my co-host, Mr. Jane, and I would be doing these podcasts together, but again, due to our schedules, I'm just doing this solo, and it's going to be my third attempt to try to do this podcast a certain way that's going to be more manageable and feasible, because the first attempt was more like a commentary of the actual movie, the whole length of the movie. So I'm like 20 minutes into the podcast, I'm not even a quarter way through the show, and I'm like, this is not going to work. And then I tried again to do a shorter format and ran out of time, so I am now doing this the day before my birthday while I am at lunch at a different location than I normally am to do the podcast, because there are a lot more kids, or at least young ones, in the library that it's even noticeable when I was in that room. So I had to move to a different location, and hopefully I get to do this podcast properly. So we'll go forward from right now. So if you haven't seen either one, Jurassic World or Ant-Man, there are going to be spoilers. So you've been warned, and I'm sure, all like me, you guys have already seen this movie. For me, I just got to see this, both of them within about a couple of weeks ago, and like back to back. So it was one of those, because of the canceled trip to Tampa, that didn't happen. We got to do that instead, which was great. I'm not complaining, but it took a while to get to see this movie, so I'm glad that I did. So let's start off with Jurassic World. Of course, the director, Colin Trevorrow, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, this one film that he made prior to this was called Safety Not Guaranteed, which starred Aubrey Plaza, who I have a big crush on. And it's a small film that I actually wanted to see because it has to deal with time travel and seems to be kind of a little of a quirky film. So Jurassic World is this big story that he got to direct, and I think he did have a hand in writing the screenplay as well. He is not coming back for Jurassic World 2, or however they want to promote it, but I think he will either be producing and writing, or just writing or producing, so one or the other. But for the most part, I was very happy with Jurassic World. If this is going to be a quote-unquote a summer movie, this was it. You didn't really have to think too much about what was not going to happen, because you got exactly what was going to happen. You have dinosaurs, you have rampage, you have big scares, you have lots of cool moments, and you got to be back in a world that we all loved many, many years ago. But having said that, this is me now. If you know me, I start to analyze things after the fact. And yes, little things bothered me throughout the way watching it the first time out, but you know what? I really didn't care. But this is the podcast in which I'm going to start nitpicking stuff about, and just kind of like, not bash it, but just kind of talk about certain things that worked for me, didn't work for me, and just go for there. All right. So we get Chris Pratt, who plays Owen. We get Bryce Dallas Howard, who plays Claire. And these are our two leads in this movie. My thing is, whose story is this really about? Unlike Jurassic World, unlike Jurassic Park, in which, to me, I've always felt it's Dr. Alan Grant's story, in which he is, you know, a paleontologist that studies, does it, archaeologist, in which he is brought to Jurassic Park to give his kind of stamp of approval of what has been created and so forth. So everything that he grew up with, all of his notions about what dinosaurs are and the notions with birds, you know, and then his other side of not being a parent came out during the part of the crisis where he had to take care of two children, which is Hammond's grandchildren. So we saw kind of like a good character growth in him, and everyone else was fantastic. So to me, when I compare the two, Jurassic World, I'm not sure as to what the point of this story is with these characters, other than they're in the story and they just kind of move things along. So as far as story arc or character development, there's none really. Claire, the Bryce's character, doesn't have any connection to her nephews when they arrive to the island. And throughout the course of the story, she somehow, I didn't really feel emotionally connected, because she did wind up taking care of them, but in no way, in shape, or form did I feel that nurturing side of her come out in any way. Now, having said that, her character, in a nutshell, was that she was not going to be pretty much a damsel in distress, which I loved, and I'm tired of seeing that being portrayed in a lot of superhero movies, where the love interest is always in jeopardy, and it's the hero, who is always the male, that has to rescue the girlfriend. So it gets really tiring. So for Claire, for the most part, she runs the damn park itself from day to day, and she does get the help of Owen, but she has this really big, massive climax scene in which she lures the T-Rex out with a flare, which is a nice little nod to the original Jurassic Park movie, and in which she gets that T-Rex to come and fight the Indominus Rex, which is the genetic hybrid dinosaur that they created. Of course, they didn't know what was going to happen, really. It was going to happen. But one line she said, people are not excited about dinosaurs anymore. They see them as elephants, like everyday animals, which is kind of like what this movie's about, because we should be satisfied that it's just about dinosaurs. No, we need to see something bigger and badder and more fierce. And that's exactly what the whole Indominus Rex really embodies, is this nastiness, this thing that's way out of our control, even more so. So it's a good line, and I was kind of like hoping that there will be other components to that that kind of fill in the gap, to make it more of a connection to me, as much as I love watching Jurassic Park. It just really was just more action-oriented. Think of it, like, in my mind, as the first one being Alien, and the second one being Aliens. Second, Aliens is more action-oriented, whereas, not that the first one wasn't, but it wasn't as elaborate. It wasn't as massive on this scale, because, one, we have a Jurassic Park world, so to speak, that has been functioning for the past, I think, 10 years, according to that storyline. And there were been no incidents until just when they got this Indominus Rex, creature untamed, uncontrollable, and just unfortunately broke out of its cage, and this is what happens. So, the other line, and has nothing to do with Claire, but I guess Owen had some kind of tie-in with Vincent D'Onofrio, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, who plays Hoskins, and he is part of Ingen's, I guess, detailed security guy. I don't know. It's still not clear to me. But he talked about how he wanted to have a military application for the Velociraptors, and how extinct animals don't have rights. I thought that's an interesting notion, because how, we would have PETA, the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, how they would react having a park like this, kind of like a zoo, or Disney doing Animal Kingdom and saying it's not a zoo. How would they react in that kind of environment to see that, you have these creatures basically have no rights? Would they protest? And we didn't get to see anything further with that, but I'm thinking in the sequel, because the one thing that it kept kind of hinting on is that we're going to see kind of an explosion of what's going to happen after the events of Jurassic World. Not so much in a way of there's going to be new zoos or things like that, but there's going to be other companies creating their own dinosaurs. So think of it as Apple, who redefined what a phone was, for a cell phone, and creating that iPod. And from there, you know, the market share was all them. And then you get competitors like Samsung that comes along and kind of makes their own version of their own iPod. And it goes from there. So you'll have other companies kind of throwing the dinosaurs out there beyond anything that we've ever seen before. Again, to attract an audience, you have to make it bigger and better. And how many times we have to trade in our phones every year for something newer and shinier. Going to be the exact same way with the dinosaurs. So we'll see what happens with the storyline with Jurassic World, the second part in that sense. The other thing, the two kids, what was it, Zach and Gray, being that they were going off to visit Claire on the island, away from their parents, and seeing how they interact with each other was very reminiscent of my own children. My son is very, very geeky into dinosaurs facts galore, especially since he's been playing Lego Jurassic World nonstop. And every day he's telling me new facts, and I was like, on and on and on. So it was just like, I get it. It's him. Whereas the older brother is very much like my daughter. He's not necessarily want to be responsible for his younger brother, but eventually, in the course of the story, he does. But it was just a lot of little mannerisms that I saw because of the age similarity between the two, that I found at least a connection to the story. But again, after a while, I really didn't care, because is it a focus on them? Is it on Claire? Is it on Owen? There is no real theme other than events. It's action-oriented, action-driven, and characters are just going along with it. There's not much after that. One thing I did want to bring up, Judy Greer, who plays their mother, also appears in Ant-Man as a mother, too. So it was weird to seeing her playing this similar character back-to-back on that. And also, a note on Bryce Dallas Howard, her hair, which with her eyes really blew me away, but Evangeline Lilly also had the same kind of haircut as well, so it was like similar in some fashion, so it was like, oh, this is a new style now. So I thought it was kind of fun just seeing, you know, the two movies back to back, how things were kind of similar. But again, I was happy with it. I can't complain anything more about Jurassic World. I do want to, again, do one of a commentary to kind of expand watching a movie with my friend, Mr. Jane, or other people who definitely want to do this with me when the movie does come out on DVD and Blu-ray, which I believe is sometime in October. All right, so I'm going to take a quick break. And I'm going to come back. I completely forgot. This is the one thing I've been like stressing about. The music. This is what I have to talk about. Okay. Everyone knows dun, 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 dun. I didn't do a good job on that at all. Whatever the case is the theme, the original theme for Jurassic Park by John Williams, is one of those scores that you feel the movie through the music. It lives and breathes without even the movie being there. So that's, to me, a mark of a great soundtrack. Okay. Problem lies is that because this movie has high expectation, you know you're going to have to use the exact same theme, but you're going to have to make it different. Kind of like I believe it's John Ottman who had to do Superman Returns with Bryan Singer. So, you know, the movie that took place after episode 2 and between 2 and 3. So he had a delicate balance of kind of paying homage to the Superman theme, but still making it another Superman-like theme, and that's a struggle. This one also was having the same problem, and it's Michael... I'm blanking out on his last name. But he's done a lot of work with J.J. Abrams, including Lost. He did the last two Star Trek movies. And here he has one theme that kind of works, but it doesn't have the exact same oomph. It doesn't really capture anything more than it kind of borrows some notes from the theme, but it doesn't really make its own chords, make it stand out, make it so memorable that people remember that and start singing or humming that new theme. It's impossible. You can't do that. It doesn't come across. And actually, I'm going to play a little bit, just a little segment I'm going to play between the breaks, and you'll get the idea. But, you know, I was watching Peter Travers on Popcorn interviewing Bryce Dallas Howard about, even between takes, the crew would watch the footage and start singing or humming the Jurassic Park theme song. And that's how strong it is, that you cannot top that. And I don't know how you could ever top that. But if you go in the way of what Zack Snyder did with the Man of Steel, you know, Hans Zimmer really made this a completely new soundtrack. His point for Zack was that we will make a Superman movie, and that score will reflect as if that never existed. This is brand new, so ignore that. And I think that's what may have to happen, because I'm not knocking how many times I hear that theme song being played or hummed by my son while he's playing Jurassic World. But it needs to have its own theme that's going to be just as memorable and not so much playing homage. But if it's going to be a series, it needs to continue to be something more evolved. So make it bigger, badder, and brassier, I guess. But whatever that is, I think that definitely has to change. So to kind of get away from the Jurassic Park theme, it needs to do something completely different. So again, give a quick listen to what I'm saying, and then I'll be right back to talk about Ant-Man. So now we are back for part two of the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast movie review. So this part I'm going to be talking about Marvel's latest addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Ant-Man, the movie that came out with Paul Rudd, Michael Douglas, and Evangeline Lilly. So again, this is going to be kind of like a lot of spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, please just stop listening to my damn show. Not that anyone's listening to my show anyway, but I'm just saying, if you're listening to it and you haven't seen Ant-Man, then stop, for God's sakes. All right. So for the most part, it's a very enjoyable movie. I was definitely really surprised about how much I liked this. I was a little bit worried about Paul Rudd not so much a superhero, but Paul Rudd playing Paul Rudd. He has a lot of funny one-liners that he does in a lot of the movies. He has silly faces, he can be an ass, he can be all those guys. And he does that kind of similar to this character for Scott. And for the most part, it's fine. One thing I do give him credit for, because when you see actors who portray heroes that have to wear a mask or a helmet or something that covers their faces, most of the time they don't want their faces to be covered. They will find a reason to have that taken off or whatever the case is. Think of it like how Sylvester Stallone in the first Judge Dredd movie. I can't say Judge Dredd. In that first movie, how he wore the helmet very little in that movie. Whereas Dredd, one with Carl Urban, which if you've not seen that, for God's sakes, please go check that out. It is so damn good. And he wears the helmet all through the day. He never takes it off. He never breaks that character. And I give him full credit on that. So I applaud actors that are so willing to be that character for the sake of that story without their egos being in the way. So with here, we get a good mixture of Scott Lang being both Ant-Man and himself, both in and out of the costume. So, and again, for the most part, I really enjoyed this movie. There are going to be problems that I would have, which are going to be just minor little details about... sorry. The minor little details that I would have is just more of, we've seen the, kind of the origin story being done again and again and again and again. And then, once again, gets rebooted again and again. So I get really tired of seeing that kind of storyline. So it's okay that the fact that, one, Henry Pym is not Ant-Man. He didn't create Ultron as in the comics. Scott Lang does take over, I think, in the comics, if I'm not mistaken, in the animated adventure series, the role of Ant-Man with the Pym technology he has to work with the ants to become Ant-Man. But my thing was Evangeline Lilly, her character, which is a daughter of Henry, and how she wasn't really given the chance to become, in my mind, the hero of the story. She seemed more capable to me, and it would have made more sense to have her be the one in the Ant-Man suit, considering that, one, she works for the corporate office of where him... It would have made more sense for her to be the Ant-Man, to be in that costume, because she had an inside track to the guy, what's his name, Darren Cross, who was taking that Pym company into a public company, and he was going to go in a different direction. So if there was going to be a way to bring it down, Evangeline's character, Hope, would have been the perfect person to do this. So it was, again, why did you need to bring Scott in? Yeah, you showed him as being a master criminal and so forth, that he's able to get through certain locks, certain situations, and whatever. Okay, that was fine. But to me, I'm just like, when are we going to see her be able to play a better character rather than a second fiddle? And I'm talking about, like, in The Hobbit, or even Lost, you know, I got to be that point where it's like, enough with, you know, being in the love triangle or being fought over, and really not much more to her going forward. But if he had stayed for the very, very last post-credit, which was two, the very last one, we find out that Dr. Pym had created a wasp outfit that belonged to Hope's mother, which is Janet. And we do see the wasp costume, and that was to me the finally a good moment that I was really clapping at, when she says the line, "It's about damn time," and that's what I liked. That's what I wish had had more of that. And I'm not knocking Paul Rudd. I'm not knocking what they did, but for God's sakes, Marvel, please give us more female characters, because I'm tired of it all being white guys. I'm tired of it being very dominated in this aspect. I want to see some diversity. So, finally we get Jen, hopefully in the second and in further movies, her character becoming Wasp in that. So, one of the things that I also was worried about, in the trailer, we see the one big joke in which, I guess this is towards the climax, that Yellow Jacket and Ant-Man are fighting. And they're fighting on Thomas the Tank Engine train set. And this is Scott's daughter's train set. So as Yellow Jacket is about to get hit by Thomas, we cut to the reaction of the real world, or not a macro or micro version of that same shot, but a macro version, in which the train just kind of topples over really easy, nothing big deal. But to him, on a micro level, it was a big deal. Very funny, and kind of concerned, like, that might be the only laugh that you may get it out of the whole movie. Surprisingly, there were more laughs, and actually better laughs, that took me by surprise, and I was really happy about that, because they could have played the whole little man in a suit jokes and so forth, but there were some genuine laughs, like when Yellow Jacket and Scott as Ant-Man, they were fighting, and somehow Scott got a paddle for table tennis and smacked Yellow Jacket into a bug zapper. That was very funny, because I wasn't expecting that. But the laughs kind of got better even after that. So that was the one thing that I was really surprised at, because a lot of the payoff finally comes towards the third act when you have the big climax. But for the most part, one of the big surprises to me, that I liked, was Michael Peña, who played Lewis. He had two very funny scenes in which he's retelling to Alan how certain things came to be, but he's using his voice and doing flashbacks, or using his voice and other characters telling how he got that certain piece of information over and over again. And of course we get Stan Lee in one of those cameos that we always expect him to be, and it was just hysterical. I loved it. So I give him kudos, because he actually, to me, stole the movie twice in that aspect. Not so much Scott Lang. Although, let me back it up. I was surprised that they were going to throw in Anthony Mackie, who played Falcon in the Captain America Winter Soldier movie, that he makes an appearance and fights Ant-Man on this. I'm like, oh my God, this is actually be turning into a good movie now, because, you know, you're incorporating different things part of that universe. And I'm like, that's really fantastic. But even better to me, I think the opening shot, in which we get a very young Michael Douglas, of course it's all computer enhanced, but we see the beginning of the Triskelion for the headquarters for S.H.I.E.L.D. There's Agent Carter right in the fold, and I was kind of happy to see that. So it kind of made my day, considering, you know, how she made my summer, so to speak, after Comic-Con with her Dub Smash Twitter feed constantly against the people from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I enjoyed her, and seeing her on the screen again made me feel happy. So for all its problems, since the departure of Edgar Wright, yeah, it tied in quite nicely into the MCU. The first post credit teaser, I guess, scene had the, I guess, Bucky his arm hold, being held up by something, or he was on the ground and his arm is up. But Anthony Mackie had found where Bucky was hiding out, and then there's Chris Evans as Captain America coming in to talk about what they're going to do, and basically he's telling Anthony, you know what, let's not tell Tony anything. I don't want him involved with this, which leads into next year's Captain America Civil War. So basically from the Avengers and what had happened in the last Age of Ultron movie, it makes sense that he doesn't want anything to do with Tony, or Tony to have anything to do with Bucky. So it makes sense. And that's that. So again, a good movie, enjoyable, fun, nothing really wrong with it. It's a good popcorn movie. Can't wait to see it again on DVD and Blu-ray, and hopefully I get to do a commentary on that again. And definitely it's going to be much longer than this podcast, and hopefully you'll enjoy what I have to say in general. So alright, so that's about it. I'm recording this the 14th of August, which is the day before my birthday, and if you're listening to this when it's released, so it will be on my birthday, I'll be 48 years old. 2 years away from AARP, and I can't wait to get my jitterbug phone with the big numbers. Yay. And the senior discounts everywhere. Alright, and less than 2 weeks, I've been tweeting about my interview that I'm going to be doing on my Page 49 podcast, which is again the library podcast I'm going to be working on, and hopefully spin off to do more episodes with young adults author Amy S. King, and that's going to be on August 25th. So if you have any questions or you have any comments you want me to relate to her, please, you can email me or direct message me on Twitter with the Sify handle. So that's Monster Sci-Fi Show with the SYFY Show on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook at the Monster Sci-Fi Show page, as well as email me. You can do that at the Monster Sci-Fi Show at gmail.com. So I'm glad I finally got through this the third time to do this podcast. So that's about it. So thank you very much for listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast, Sci-Fi from a Certain Point of View. Good night, folks.